Hi there, I'm Colm O'Sullivan, and this is the Policy Options Podcast. Retraining workers who have lost their jobs so that they can successfully transition into a new field has been an elusive goal for governments. Not only is skills retraining a difficult sector to navigate for policymakers, but studies have shown mixed results in the benefits and drawbacks of this training, which has shaken the public's confidence in whether or not it's an economically viable solution. But the past year has changed Canada's labour market and employment sector. Not only were some sectors like tourism nearly decimated, the entire economy as a whole took a hit, making it extraordinarily difficult to find jobs that workers could easily transfer their skills to. But governments no longer have a choice in this matter. These workers need jobs, and in order for many of them to get those jobs, they need to be retrained in new fields. Kelly Pozzoli, along with Karen Myers and Simon Harding of Blueprint, conducted a study for the IRPP which examined studies that have been done in this area to find out what worked and what didn't. They found two promising systems that Canada could benefit from. Today, I'm speaking with Kelly Pozzoli about these systems and what the Canadian government needs to do to successfully retrain under- or unemployed workers in the post-pandemic future. Well, Kelly Pozzoli, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today.
Thank you for having me.
I just want to start off kind of setting the scene for Canada's skills training landscape right now. So what does it look like and is it serving its purpose?
So let me start with a definition of what I mean when I say skills training. So when I talk about skills training, I mean short-term training. So anywhere from a few weeks up to 1 year. That's designed to help adults who are unemployed or underemployed prepare for new job opportunities. In Canada, we have really strong K-12 and post-secondary education systems, but our skills training systems for working adults aren't as strong. We have some programs for working adults, but relative to other countries, adult workers in Canada have pretty limited training opportunities. Lots of people might not know what programs are available to them, or if they're aware of those programs, they might not be eligible. And this is a real issue because we know there's lots of adults who are struggling to find their foothold in the labor market. And if you add on all the changes to the labor market that are coming from technology, environmental impacts, and of course, the economic impacts of the COVID-19 pandemic, you can see why this is a real issue. Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you mentioned other countries. Is this other OECD countries that we're comparing to?
Yeah, there's a recent public policy forum paper by Daniel Munro in 2019 that did a really good job of showing how Canada's skills training systems compare to the systems in other OECD countries. And he makes the case that Canada is really underperforming relative to these other countries. Mm-hmm. Working Canadians receive fewer hours of training per year than the OECD average. And Canada also spends less of our GDP on training compared with the OECD average.
Why is Canada spending less?
I think there's a lot of reasons why that could be. One thing that makes skills training for adults in Canada complicated is that whereas skills training and labor market policy used to be primarily under the jurisdiction of the federal government, responsibility for those programs has been over time devolved to the level of the provincial government. Because of that, we have a somewhat fragmented approach to skills training for adults across the country. And one of the things that's really worrisome is that the Canadian workers who are most likely to need more training, so those who are in rural or remote locations, those who don't have post-secondary education, those with lower levels of literacy, they're also the least likely to actually get training as adults.
So as it stands now, I mean, the goal of these systems is to match an employee with the skills they need to get a job as fast as possible. Mm-hmm. Is that the right approach or should they be training to get the job that's best for them or best for that area?
Yeah, that's a really good question. The people who might benefit from skills training are really diverse in terms of their needs, their goals, their motivations for doing training. So there's no one-size-fits-all approach that is going to work for everyone. I would say that there needs to be an emphasis on assessing what individuals need and helping them explore their goals and options, and then connecting them to the right programs and services that can help them get to where they need to be. So some folks will want to find a job quickly. That will be their priority. And so there should be options in place to help them do that. And there might be others who want to invest in longer term training and building up their skills. And so there should be options available for them as well.
Studies on this style of training have shown that it might not work in practice. Mm-hmm. Now, this has kind of shaken the public's confidence on this style of training and retraining. Mm-hmm. So what do those studies really show, and why are they getting these mixed results?
Yeah, so my colleagues and I took a deep dive into this research that's been done on skills training. We looked at research over the past several decades in Canada, the US, and internationally to try and find out really what the evidence is telling us about the effectiveness of skills training. We found that there were some very high profile impact studies of large government sponsored skills training programs in the US that were done in the 1980s and 1990s. And these studies concluded that training wasn't very effective in increasing employment prospects and earnings for participants. So this created a lot of doubt about whether it was worth it for governments to invest in skills training. Later, some other researchers went back and uncovered some methodological problems with some of these studies. So the way that these studies worked was they randomly assigned folks into two groups. The first group could participate in the training program and the second group could not. And then the researchers would compare the results of the two groups to see if the training program was effective. The problem was that some people in the first group didn't end up completing or even enrolling in the training. And some people in the second group just went and found training or other services elsewhere. So later analyses showed that these studies might actually have underestimated the impacts of the training programs. Mm. And in our research, we also found a lot of other more recent studies of skills training programs that have found really positive impacts for participants in terms of helping them find jobs and increase their earnings. So we felt the argument that skills training doesn't work actually wasn't backed up by the evidence.
And I just want to clarify, you say they found that it might not be worth it. Worth it in what sense?
A lot of those studies argued that because it is a fairly significant investment often on the part of governments to design and deliver these programs, that unless they were having a meaningful impact for participants in terms of helping them get back into the labor market and increase their earnings, that investment didn't make sense for government.
So your research shows something a bit different. Mm-hmm. What are you doing now that's different from this other research that you looked at?
Yeah, so what we did was really try to dig into the research on skills training and ask ourselves not, does skills training work or not, but ask, in which cases does it work? And for the studies that have found positive impacts from skills training, what are the features of those programs that do seem to be working? So in our research, we found two really promising skills training models. The first is called the sector-based model, and the second is the career pathways model. Sector-based training aims to align training with in-demand occupations in the local labor market. So in this model, training providers work really closely with employers to identify what their skills needs are and then design training to meet those needs. The career pathways model is similar in that it tries to line up training with the needs in the local labor market, but it does so specifically through the post-secondary system. So career pathways models provide a series of training opportunities that offer credentials that are relevant to industry and employers. So it creates steps in a training pathway that are then linked to specific career opportunities in the labor market.
So with both of these different types of models, the goal of them is to align these skills with the needs of the local labor market?
Yeah, definitely. In both of these models, training is specifically designed to help participants get the skills they need to fill jobs that are available in their local area. So our research found that the most effective programs tend to be the ones that have the strongest alignment with those needs in the labor market. So they design and deliver training that helps participants build skills for in-demand jobs, and that also gives employers confidence that the candidates from those programs will be well prepared to fill the roles that they have available.
Now, in order to know what type of training these employees need, you have to know what's going on in the local labor market. So how can you gauge what skills are needed in that local labor market?
Yeah, obviously, for these training models to work, you need really good information and data on labor market trends and skills needs. So actually, the Labor Market Information Council is an organization doing really important work in Canada to improve the labor market information that's available, including trying to make that data really local so that communities can understand what's happening in their labor market close to home, not just looking at broad regional or national trends and what's happening in the labor market. And the Labor Market Information Council is also working on making that labor market information more accessible and user-friendly so that training providers and individuals can make really good use of that information. The other piece that's really important in terms of figuring out what skills are needed in a local labor market is building really strong partnerships between training providers and employers. So the most successful training providers that we've seen in our research are working really closely with employers in an ongoing way to identify what skills those employers are looking for, to articulate those skills needs really clearly, and then also anticipate how those skills needs might be changing over time so that they can adapt their training.
What is a training provider? Because you mentioned the K-12 and university and college system, but this would be kind of outside that.
Yeah, so when I'm thinking of training providers for skills training for adults, it's a pretty diverse set of organizations that could be delivering this training. A lot of nonprofit community service providers offer this type of training. There are post-secondary institutions that also offer some of this short-term training. So it's a pretty diverse group.
Now, this solution to an issue is especially important in the context of 2021 with the global pandemic. And other countries are probably going through a very similar experience that we are, right? Mm-hmm. And so have you looked at best practices from around the world to see what other countries are doing in skills retraining?
Yeah, a lot of our research looked at what are some of the most promising programs in other countries. In our paper on the topic of skills training, we talk a lot about effective programs in the US, where there has been a lot of rigorous research on skills training compared to other countries. So there are some examples of sector-based models and career pathway models in the US that have shown especially promising results. While a lot of the research on what works comes from the US, I also wanted to highlight that there's some really interesting experimentation and learning happening in Canada as well. So the Future Skills Center is an organization funded by the federal government to test innovations in skills development. And the Future Skills Center has invested in some really promising sector-based skills training models across Canada. The organization I work for, Blueprint, is the evidence generation lead for the Future Skills Center. So we're working really closely with the program delivery partners for some of these models to build evidence about them. So we're really looking forward to learning more about how well some of these sector-based models work in the Canadian context.
And now one aspect that I found really interesting was that it's not enough to just give somebody training, because there are so many peripheral needs that these people need in order to make sure that that training is successful. Mm-hmm. So can you talk about some of these kind of services that are required in order to make this training successful outside of the classroom?
Yeah, definitely. Like you said, most adults who are looking to participate in training have a lot of other things happening in their life. So they might need support with transportation to get to a training site. They might need help with childcare in order to be able to participate in the training. So supports for adults to help address some of those situational barriers can really be important for opening up access to training. There's also supports like coaching, mentorship, peer support that are really important for helping encourage and motivate participants in training programs, some of whom might have had, you know, negative experiences in school or might just be nervous about participating in training. So our research highlighted that a lot of the most effective programs do a really good job of offering these types of supports.
And now, evidence also shows that training can be really effective for some participants in certain contexts. And that's really something that you stressed throughout the study. Is there any way of knowing how to ensure this in advance so we're not just doing trial and error?
This is a really important question, because while the research shows that skills training can work, it also shows that implementing effective programs is really hard. So a lot of the most effective programs that we found in our research required a lot of upfront investment in time, resources to you know, consult employers, design training, recruit participants, and just set up a program that is designed for success. So one of the recommendations in our paper is that policymakers invest in testing new programs on a small scale first, and then scaling up the ones that seem most promising. So it essentially is doing trial and error, like you said, but on a small scale so that it's possible to work out some of the kinks first. We also recommend that policymakers really dig in to try to understand which models are the best candidates for scaling. So some programs might work really well on a small scale, but they might not be good candidates to be implemented more widely because they're very expensive to deliver, they're very difficult to implement, or maybe there isn't a lot of demand for them outside of one or two communities. So we really need to explore those questions when we think about which skills training models are the best candidates to be implemented broadly.
If you're speaking, say, directly to the policymakers, because this is definitely something that they're going to have to look at in this context of, you know, the labor market after COVID-19, what guidance can you give them in developing this system to ensure its success?
Mm-hmm. I would say a really important first step is to look at what's currently happening in their skills training systems, what's working well, and where there might be gaps. And then from there, policymakers can be really intentional about how to address those gaps, drawing on the evidence about what makes skills training effective. So addressing those gaps could involve testing and scaling up promising models, as I touched on earlier. It could also involve making more investments in building strong networks and partnerships between employers and training providers to make it easier to design training that's aligned with employer needs. It could involve making investments in better labor market and skills data so that training providers can better understand what's happening in their local labor markets. We also recommend that one way policymakers could look at strengthening their skills training systems is to experiment with the career pathways model, which would require working with post-secondary institutions and other training providers. Right now, there are a lot of barriers to implementing a program like Career Pathways in Canada. One is that post-secondary institutions are generally funded to deliver longer credentials, not the sort of short-term training that is involved in Career Pathways. So we recommend that policymakers start to look at some ways that they could facilitate experimentation with the Career Pathways model by addressing some of those barriers. The other piece of advice I would give to policymakers is to invest in building more evidence about the effectiveness of skills training models. So that would include both measuring outcomes for participants in skills training, but also understanding how well models are being implemented, how participants are experiencing their time in different programs, and how programs can be improved over time. So building evidence about all those different questions would really help us build skills training systems that are responsive and that are informed by evidence and learning.
All right. Well, I mean, as I've mentioned, in the context of COVID-19 and everything that in the changes that's happening in our economy and in turn the job market, this is a really important sector to watch. So thank you so much for speaking with me today.
Thank you for having me.
I'd like to say thanks again to Kelly Pozzoli for joining me today. If you would like to read the study that she worked on along with Karen Myers and Simon Harding with the IRPP, you can find that on our website at irpp.org. The title of that study is Skills Training That Works: Lessons from Demand-Driven Approaches. If you would like to get in contact with us, please do so on social media under the handle IRPP. And if you would like to send me a message, you can do so under the handle Colm F. O'Sullivan. That's Colm F. O'Sullivan. Thanks again for listening.